You know, we've been doing a series, and this is the last one today that we finish up. Hey, I see some guys over here that I'm not seeing their faces, so go ahead and turn on around. If you wouldn't mind.
Awesome.
We're doing this series about the family. And I said last week, and I think it's absolutely true, family is where your faith is most clearly seen and it's most clearly tested. Because, you know, when you go home, you treat your family many times worse than you do your friends. Because of your family. You know, what are they going to do? Like, kick you out? They may be tempted. But they won't. That's a natural tendency. We always, for some reason, treat those we love far worse than those that we want respect and love from outside of our family. And today, I'm going to walk back and kind of tell you where we're going. Today, we're looking at a wide-angle view of our family. You know, the first week was a snapshot to say, how does it look? And for most of us, our family always doesn't look as good or match up with those that we see around. We're like, hey, they look like they're having more fun. They look like they really like each other. Ours stinks sometimes. And if you're here and you have a family that you love, count that a huge blessing. And that is a gift from God. And that's a work of God. So not to discount that. I think in Christ, our families should work. But our families, no matter how good they are a group of people who are sinners and who live out their life in a real way. And the nice thing is, at home, you are probably more who you really are than you are with your friends. And so that's why, even as messy as it looks like it at home sometimes, that's a great place to go. That's where I need to start. And that's why this is important, what we're talking about. Okay, secondly, last week, we looked at resolution. And resolution basically meant look close enough to see what's going on there. And we looked at the life of Joseph. And we looked and realized, you know, he had 11 years going down. Had no reason to follow God. Had no reason to ever love or want to return to his family. His brothers, you know, totally were committed to, we like him dead. We're tired of his mouth. We're tired of his attitude. We're tired of him being a favorite. So they all, basically all of them said, hey, we'll just let him die. Ultimately sold him into slavery and then went down from there. The thing that we saw, and this is what you can do with Scripture, you can back up and look, is you look really close, you realize that 11 years was the training ground that God used to prepare him to be the second in command of the largest nation on earth at that time. Not a nice story, it's a hard story. But he came to the hard realization that at the end of his life, when his brothers had to come back and basically come to Egypt to get food. There's no other place to get it. And they had to come before him. He had every opportunity. That would have been the royal opportunity to not only make them squirm, and he did test them. He wanted to see, are you any different than the brothers that sold me into slavery? But he had every opportunity to lock them up for the rest of their lives, put them to death, no one that would have ever questioned him, because he had that kind of authority. But what he did in chapters 50 of Genesis, it said he had come to that point, and hopefully in Shepherd Roots this last week, you talked about how did he get there? How did he get to the point where at the end of his life, he could look at all the garbage and say, you meant it for evil. Truth. That is true. But God meant it for good. I can see when I really look closely that God was at work. And therefore, when we take on, you know, a lot of stimulus, a lot of reaction to us, we have an opportunity to stop and know, okay, God's in the middle of this, and I can respond differently because I know that God is at work. Today we're looking at wide angle, and we're going to say, okay, let's say I get it. Let's say I see God working. Then what is my responsibility? Today I'm going to give you three things that will help you know what you need to own in your family. And the thing I like about biblical Christianity, it's not teaching you nice things about how being nice to other people will give you a nice life. The Bible takes you into the ugly part of our lives, like he did with Joseph. And he says, that's where we live. And then God says, and this is my way to really work in this. This is the way I will work through this to my own glory and to an end beyond what you can imagine. That's what God says. I'm going to show you a short clip right now, and in the context of it, I want you to think of this in terms of a family. It's a Christmas-type movie. And think of yourself as the leading character and how you live this out, this attitude out at home. All right? Let me point out something. You might have had trouble figuring out, well, which character am I in the story? I love it. I would say you are Scrooge. Okay, you're Ebenezer, like I am. And at home, you want justice. You want it your way. You want it now. You accept no excuses, whether it's of your parents or of your siblings. You know what you want, and you want to get it. And you give no grace much of the time. And obviously, the story comes to that point when he says, you know what, I'm going to beat Bob Cratchit. He was getting ready to hear you're going to be fired. That's what he expected. And that's the culture that sometimes can live in a family. It's all justice. There's no grace. And you expect the worst. And you react as you were reacted to, and it just goes that way and goes down. But you know what? It's interesting to me, and I'm not sure exactly what Dickens had in mind, but Scrooge had a view of himself as the only one that mattered. He's the only one that he cared about. He had love for money, though he never got to enjoy it. And he cared little and gave little to the poor, figuring they should have been able to do it for themselves. And then when he had the visitors, the ghost of Christmas past, and he remembered his upbringing, and he remembered the way he used to feel, and he remembered the love that he lost, and how he got hard. Can you remember that? Can you remember when you were a kid and things weren't maybe the way they are right now? And you were tended to your parents, and Christmas actually was magical. You know, Disney was too. But then something can happen, or wounds and offenses can build up, and there's a wall there. And then he looked at the ghost of Christmas present, and he saw the way things were really going on around him. He saw Tiny Tim as he really was. He saw the way, you know, people acted towards him and mocked him, what they really thought of him, but he didn't know it. And it broke his heart. But he saw things as they really are, and that's what we're appealing to you and your family right now. Are you going to be able to see things the way they are, or only from your perspective? And the worst one, you know, where the black cape and the dark finger comes out, the ghost of Christmas future, is he takes him to his grave and he says, is that all you're going to have? And I love it at that point. He says, I get it. Is there any way I can change? Is there any way that I can affect my life going any differently? And he wakes up in his bed and he jumps out. And he's radically different because he realizes his life is back. He can do something. He's not going to stay as he was because he gets it. And he says, I need to now live out the grace I've been given, the chance I've been given. And I love it, man, that it says he celebrated Christmas well. And my prayer for you is that you'll celebrate Christmas well, meaning if Jesus Christ humbled himself, came to earth, allowed us to mock him and mistreat him and die in our place. All those things we don't deserve. Are we willing to take on that same spirit and say, I am going to do for others, especially in my house? And though they don't deserve it, and though I've got plenty of reasons to deny it and just dismiss it, I will give as I have been given. And that's where you get to see that joy in his face. And is able to say, I'm going to double your salary. I'm going to actually help you with your son. What would it mean for you to breathe grace into your parents? Would it freak them out if you said, I thank you for all you've done for me my entire life. You've always been there for me. Maybe we haven't always agreed, but I get it. And you really start looking at their life and pulling out what's going on in their life. I would challenge you, if the Lord will allow it, to even draw your dad out and say, Dad, what are the pressures you feel every week? They're like, you don't have a clue. He looks like he's got it all together. He comes home and reads the paper and falls asleep. And you think, that's boring. Right? Or whatever. Or he comes home and he's nasty to you. And so, like, I don't want to be around him. You have any idea the inertia that comes to bring that home? You don't. I didn't. But all of that still comes down to the fact that you need to make choices. Today, I want to talk about that. What are the choices that you need to make? In Romans chapter 12, I'm not going to have, if you have your Bible, you can turn and look at it, but I'm just going to kind of give you some quick overviews on it. It starts out, like many of you know, in chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. It says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies, your whole being, as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable form of worship. In other words, you know, based on all everything God's done, God says, show up. You show up. Put yourself in the altar and say, God, I am yours. What else could I do other than that? And I'm going to have a sacrifice in my life of holiness. Because that's acceptable. That's what you desire. And that's the way I will worship you is in my life. And then it goes on and says, do not be conformed to this world. Don't let all the pressure you're feeling around you all the time, don't let that pressure squeeze you into a mold, which it is trying to do. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind. This is the battlefield that you guys have and I have. Because our mind, the way we think, what we perceive to be true is not accurate. And God says, if you will let my word transform your mind, you'll be able to do everything I've told you. And this is what we really need. It says, transform your mind so that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And those are a lot of words to say this. God says, if you present yourself and say, God, I'm yours, you let me mess with your head to put truth there instead of the lies you usually believe. Says, then you'll be able to discern, you'll figure out what my will is, how to do what it is I've called you to do. So that's what we're talking about here. How do I do this? How do I live this out? Verse 18 says this. So as far, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. And I want to throw this out to you, that what God expects from you, your part, as far as it is possible with you, God says, you give 100%. Don't use your parents or siblings as an excuse to give less than that, and trust God to do his part. But then in verse 9, it says, let love be without hypocrisy. And I want you to think about that for a minute. How could our love be hypocritical? How can our love for other people be in a way that what we say doesn't match what we do? Okay, there's three ways, right? These are the action steps I would throw out to you today. The first one is a sincere love, okay, is a chosen submission. Okay, if you're keeping notes, that's the first thing. Actually, somebody throw me a white sheet. I know it bugs me, but I can't fall in line, so I'm sure it bugs some of you. So, a chosen submission. You know, we know in the Bible, the Ten Commandments, honor and obey your parents. It's really clear. I want to point out to you, though, in this section, it says this, verse 3, it says, do not think more highly of yourselves than you should think. Have sound judgment. In other words, get a grip. You're not all that. We start thinking we are so important. Our needs come first. And God says, look at the situation. Have a sober mind. Realize, you know what? I can't demand anything. I can't say you owe me anything. What we deserve based on the way you live is to be judged by God. Everything on top of that is blessing. Or like Frank Cerone says, it's bonus. Is that the way we live? Secondly, it says in verse 16, do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. And do not be wise in your own estimations. Okay? How do you choose submission? What does that look like? The first thing is, you let your parents parent you. You let your parents parent you. You make it easy on them to fulfill the command that God gave them. Okay? You let them parent you. I see a lot of students who do everything they can to thwart what God has absolutely told their parents to do. Your parents have every right and responsibility to say no to you. No is not a negative word. No is a boundary. And sometimes boundaries are great. You know, the boundary of speed limits keeps some people from dying. But a lot of people are like, I don't like that boundary. I'm going to go faster. That's fine. But you could hinder yourself. You could hurt yourself. So how do you do this? Well, I need to deal with my pride and my overestimation myself. The context there, it says, we need to abhor evil. And one evil is when we live out our pride and think we are so that we blow off our parents. God says, that's wicked. Don't do that. Secondly, we need to embrace the no, okay? That's from the Lord. God put them in charge, and when they say no, you can get mad at them for, no, you can't go there. No, you can't do that. No, you can't wear that, okay? No, you can't say that to me. no, you need to do this. You had another plan. No, I want you to do this. That you need to, if you really want to submit without hypocrisy, is to realize it's from the Lord. Because God says the way that we show that we love someone clearly is by obedience. He says that to about himself directly. He says, those who love me keep my commandments. And if you think about it, that's absolutely true. And if you want to figure out who you really love, it's who you obey. For some of you who are blessed with a boyfriend or girlfriend, okay, say you're going there, and they mention, oh, I'd love to go there. Like, we're there. Like, we are going there. Like, oh, I'd love to have that for Christmas. You know, like, it's so already bought. I mean, it's like, I want to do what makes you happy because it's where my heart is. But you know who we love the most and who we obey the most is really ourselves. What I want, when I want it, I do that because I love me and I obey me very well. And God says, I want you to transfer that to love your parents enough to obey them. That's how you show that you love. Third one is pursue the wisdom they have for you. This might blow you away. No matter what you think of your parents, they have some nuggets for you that you could very easily leave their house and never get. Okay? Like, there's some life lessons they've learned, and by their DNA that they passed to you, you need to know what they are. The things you struggle with, maybe not specifically, but in the area of what it is, they have learned some things. They pass that DNA down to you, but they need to pass the answer down to you too. And you might think, well, they're not doing well. Well, that might be true, but you know what? They might have the answer and be struggling with living that out. But you'll never know unless you go to your parents, have a relationship of submission, getting under their authority where you go, I want to hear, what has God taught you? How have you handled that? When grandma was so hard on you, what did you do? With a genuine heart, they have some nuggets for you. They have life lessons they've learned, but you kind of draw it out. Secondly, is in the area of needed change in your life. If you want to know how you need to change, your parents are the ones who can tell you. They've seen you from diapers to now, right? They know you. And sometimes if you really want an accurate understanding, where do I need to change, they can tell you. They won't say, if they feel like you're open to it, they won't answer nothing. Because they love you enough to say, I know who you are, I see you, that you can be, and I would love to have you know that. That's why I would tell you that, but I don't tell you because I don't think we're there. There's something else that's something that you really need to get from them, and that is your gifting and calling. Right now, between now and the end of college, you're on this journey, and you're trying to figure out, why was I created? What can I do that God designed me to do? The secret of life is if you find the passion that God created you, you can do it the rest of your life, and it isn't work. It's a blast. Though it may be hard, it energizes you. And you know what? Your parents have a great ability to see you because they've observed you from the outside. But they're not going to be able to give you much if you are a closed book, a wall. If the information stops coming, they might be able to help you. So getting under their authority says, I'm going to let you in. I'm going to allow you to know me. And that will allow them to breathe into you. The next one is to make transparency of who you are and what you're doing so that they can speak into your life and give you the boundaries you need. And this is what I would say. We can all play those games like, well, if I told them I'm grounded for life, you know, or they would be so shocked. Well, I might challenge you that they probably, if they were totally honest with you, it might shock you what's happened in their life. And it may shock them because they want so much to help you walk through high school without being hurt. But you know what? God gives grace at the time it's needed. You need to be transparent. So they, for some of you, you need your parents to intervene. If they really knew what you were doing, they would know how to deal with you. There was a student a long time ago that I never really suspected, and he told me, yeah, throughout high school, we all went to bed, and I snuck out of my house almost every night. And then I started growing pot in our attic. And this is a kid that everybody thought was just on fire, great kid. And he came to the point and said, you know, I'm tired of living a lie. Are you living a lie? Are you have the guts and the faith to open that up to your parents? Because what they can do is they can help you. You tell your friends because they can't help you. They'll go, that stinks. That's bad. Shouldn't do that. But they don't have any teeth in it like, I'm going to help you. And when your parents say, I'm going to help you, it will cost you. It will hurt. But you know what? Change can happen and growth can come out of that. but they can also help you see where you need to go. And they can remind you what's true, and they can remind you, I'm fighting for you. I will not give up on you. I don't care what you've done. I want to see you become who I know God wants you to be. I'm not going to let Satan kick you into a curb and let you live there and die there. I'm going to be part of you changing. And lastly, the example is Christ. In John 15:9, it says, the Son only does what he sees the Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. Do you believe that they would want to do, do you do what they, do you do what you know they want you to do? If you did that, what, you know, what would Jesus do? If you put, what would Mom do, want me to do? You can usually fill in that answer, and to be honest, if you want to know the answer, you can always ask. Once you have the cell phone, you can ask at any point of the day, what would you want me to do right now? And they'll tell you. I put a point down there, it's true, it's from 1 Samuel. It says rebellion, which is what we're talking about here, is as the sin of, what's the word? Anybody know? Witchcraft. That's a strong word, isn't it? Rebellion, teenage rebellion, everybody does it, is like the sin of witchcraft. Why? Why? Because there are only two options. Obedience acknowledges one authority. Rebellion acknowledges another. And so when we tell our parents off, whether in action or passive-aggressively, we're saying, you know what, I'm going to go my way, but my way is not really my way, it's the other way, which is from Satan's side. The second big point there is let God be God. He's the one you're ultimately submitting to. He's the one who's established the system within the family. And so when you choose to not honor your parents and obey your parents, not only do you not love them, but you are not loving God. Okay, the second big area is an unconditional respect. And I'm going to pick it up and kind of run through here. An unconditional respect. And verse 10 says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Okay, so what are some steps of action that you can take if you want to make a difference, a real difference in your family? You can get under your parents' authority. The second thing is you can have an unconditional respect within your family. Verse 10 says, be devoted. Verse 11 says, give preference to one another in honor. With parents, you need to give unconditional respect for them in the position that God has placed them in your life. And you do that with your attitudes, with your actions, with your words, and then verbally recognizing the role they play. It's unconditional because God demands it, no matter how they act. It's for their position. The issue that a lot of us have is, you know, we've had presidents where, I mean, we know we're supposed to pray for them, we're supposed to honor them, but we don't always know what to do with that. And God says, you still need to give honor there. And Christians, I think, fail a lot by criticizing authorities that they don't think are right. I think you can point out issues, but ultimately he says, you honor that position because I put him there. Because when you say, I don't like that authority, you're ultimately saying, God, I don't think you were smart enough to put the right person there. And many times God, or sometimes God puts someone there because it's judgment on us. He would have liked to have put a different one there. But you know what? God has placed your parents there. And you need to recognize that. Three quick things about that. Number one, 50-50 never works. It must be 100% on your part no matter what they do. It doesn't work in a marriage. It doesn't work in a family. Meaning this, I'm nice to you and you're nice to me. That works only one way. They're nice to you. Okay? God says, no, I've commanded you. I want you to respect them, so it starts with you. Secondly, love starts when the obligation ends. The second mile principle is found in Matthew 5:41. The principle is this. Jesus said, you know it's been said of you, if someone tells you to carry their pack a mile, which is exactly what a centurion would do, he'd say, I'm tired. You, peasant, here's my pack. You are obligated to take it a mile. You cannot say no. You must do it. You walk a pack, you drop it, you leave. Jesus said, do your mile. And then he says, I challenge you. I man and woman challenge you. It's in the Greek. Jesus said that. He said, I challenge you to go the second mile. You carry an additional mile because that mile is yours. The first mile is obligated. The second mile is your statement. I don't know that many people did that. But that's what he calls us to as believers. So when you and your family know what's obligated, you show that, okay, I'm willing, I have to do what I have to do. But when you go beyond that, you say, I respect you, and I value you, and I'm doing it because I want to. I'm going beyond the norm. Are you willing to go beyond the norm? God challenges us to do that. Lastly, he says, overcoming evil. He says, overcome evil with good. I'll throw two things at you. One is overcoming your own evil, your own pride, your own arrogance, your own selfishness, by committing to the good of others. God says, I can start dealing with the junk in my life. All I've got to do is overcome that evil with the good. Secondly is, overcome the evil in others. Scrooge is a great example of nasty people. And then I know this is probably dating me, and you probably have not, but has anyone seen the movie Pollyanna? Okay, all right. Thank you. I'm glad you're there. It's a story about this girl who lives with this crotchety old woman, and she seems oblivious to the fact that she's crotchety. And she keeps responding in a nice way. And this woman is like just busting her chops. And at the end, that woman loves her dearly, and she radically changes her. You can do that in your family if you're willing to overcome evil with good. So what are some of the actions, words, time spent, prayer, giving when people don't deserve it? I can truly love the ones I choose to lavishly pour my life out into. They are the treasure. Okay. The last one is, actually, I jumped ahead and shared with you what it looks like to be an overwhelming giver. Okay, sorry about that. So I'll jump back and say, unconditional respect for siblings is when you recognize the role that God's given them in your life. And you look through their eyes to see the way where they are in their life and help them fight the battle in their own life. And the innate value that God gives every person he creates and gives, he gives them to. I want to close with this. Again, on the issue of giving respect. You give respect to your parents. You give respect to your older siblings and your younger ones. But a little picture of that. How many of you have seen the movie The Help? Okay. I like the movie The Help. It's set in the 40s and 50s in the United States when prejudice ran rampant. It was the black women who raised white babies in the South. And it showed the way people mistreated them. My disclaimer is, wait till it gets to TV and to take out all the cussing, okay? It had way too much of that. But there was one woman there who is interesting. There's one woman there who was just the most wicked wife in the way she treated the woman who helped her. And the woman who helped her's name is Abilene. And Abilene loved this little girl, went beyond just being someone who helped out, really cared and helped raise that little girl. The problem with that little girl is that little girl was fat. And in that society, her mom did not like her because she was not beautiful. She couldn't show her off. And so what Abilene did, and it didn't make sense when she started doing it, but at the end of the movie, it totally came out because basically this, because of Abilene being honest about what was going on, she lost her job. And so it's the little girl's crying, saying, "Don't leave, don't leave." And you realize at that point that mother was never going to care for her, never going to invest love in her, just shunned her. And these words are what Abilene said all the time. She said, "You is kind, you is smart, you is important. You is kind, you is smart, you is important." Because you know what? She would never hear those words from her mother. And it took someone who willingly came in a humble position just to survive and care for her own family. She took on this little girl and she said those words and poured her life into her. And reminded her was absolutely true. You are kind. You are loving. You are important. You're smart. You are important. And I believe that would be the words that would help her get through life. My challenge to all of us here is, are we having that kind of role in our family? Are we under the authority of our parents? Do we respect those enough around us to really give them value? And lastly, do we pour out or do we only take? I want you to close your eyes and bow your head for a moment. I want you to stop and consider. Not anybody else looking around. I know that God has been speaking to me about my life, my love, not being hypocritical. without anybody looking around, I just want you to do a God agreement thing. If you feel like God has been talking to you, as we've talked here, about this as a need in your life, without anybody looking around, I just want you to lift up your hand to identify to yourself, yeah, God, this is something I'm new, I need to address in my life. Just lift up your hand, look down. Yeah, this is me. This is something I know. Okay. Father, I agree with those who sense the need for change. And God, I thank you that you never give up on us. You are gracious. And you desire us to be free. And God, I pray for each of us here, Lord, that we would get under your authority. And by our faith and your grace, get under the authority of parents and friends. And God, I pray that as you have given us value, you purchased us, gave us your righteousness. God, I pray we give value to others and respect them. And that's the Lord, as you pour out into us, God, may we pour out into others. Lord, I pray today, if there's anyone here who does not know what it means to be forgiven of all the garbage in our life, that today they would give that garbage to you. Not just be forgiven those things, but to be forgiven for all that they will do in their entire life, because that's what you died and paid for. And Jesus, as you invite them to have a relationship with you, I pray they would be open to walking with you. Help them to learn that your love is absolutely unconditional. And God, I pray if today they've not done that, that they would cry out to you today. And God, for those of us who know you, we cry out for your grace to live out what we know. And we thank you for the reminder today. And we praise you in the incredible name.